always, I don't know, I feel like the Sunday after Easter is always a letdown Sunday. Christ the Lord is risen. He's still risen, but it seems a little more risen on Easter Sunday, right? It is good to be with you. This morning, we're going to continue our group activities. I want you to think this morning about, this is an age-old discussion question, but I want you to talk amongst yourselves. If you were stranded on a desert island, you could take two things with you. Two. I want you to turn to the person around you, the people around you, and discuss. What would you take? I'm fascinated to know what Claire Lewis would take. But talk among yourselves. Two things. Share with the people around you. Two things that you could take on a desert island with you. Our desert stranded. Come on, Kirk, don't be too particular. Is it tropical or is it Antarctic? Two things if you're stranded all alone. All right, let's talk about what we came up with. It seems to me there's a couple different directions we could go with the answers. On the one hand, we could talk about luxury items. Like, I wouldn't want to leave home without my hair dryer, or I wouldn't want to leave home without my curlers or whatever. Now, we're pretty low maintenance, so I don't know if anybody have any luxury items? I mean, you only get two. Luxury? Yes? A what? Maybe an iPad too. I'm not going to give you my answer by looking up, but I'll be all right. Water would be a good one, right? Hutch? Okay, so there's a utility question, right? Like, okay, if I'm stranded on a desert island, I'm going to bring two things to get off the island with, or at least like prolong my life. I'm going to get a water treatment pills, or a boat, or something, a shovel, a toilet, you know, something that I can. Because I have to admit, if I could only take one item, like a luxury toilet would be, I'd probably be good. Like, as long as I had that and a couple hundred rolls of toilet paper. Seeds, right? Utility, right? Just something to prolong your life. Any other items that you, I'm curious, Margaret Dronsfield, what would you want to take with you? Okay, so there's the spiritual route. Thanks a lot, church. It finally got there. We can look at it as kind of a spiritually enriching time. Now, I know a lot of Bible verses, but imagine how quickly you'd just be kind of lost without your Bible, right? So having a Bible, maybe a crucifix or a picture of Christ or just something to kind of use to kind of help this be a, because if you're isolated all by yourself, you're going to have the opportunity to have kind of this spiritual awakening or something. So that's good, Margaret. Anybody else have any direction they like to go? Anybody? No, that covers Pat. Bill, buddy, if you're all by yourself, your anal retentive exact measurements aren't going to matter. You know, it's interesting. Anytime you talk about this, nobody brings up what will probably be the thing we'll miss the most. What would you miss the most if you were stranded on a desert island all by yourself? Oh, I know. I baited you, right? I baited you. My lovely bride. She's not even here, Mike, but you're coming through. That's why you didn't speak up. You would have spoke up if she was here. We know who she would take, Mary Beth, don't we? She would take me, leave her mom. It is interesting, and I know it's the way that the question is usually phrased that we immediately think of things, but in reality, if we were stranded somewhere alone, we would miss our interaction with people the most. Now, granted, we're not all real outgoing people, so it may just be, you know, you can have a globally positioned satellite phone where you could at least talk to people, or if it's just an imaginary hypothetical situation, have internet access, or just some connection to people. That's right. With two people, the island would be big enough for two churches, because we know that they would not get along. It's interesting because even in our facilities of punishment, quote unquote, prisons, what do they still use as punishment within the punishment? They'll put you in solitary confinement, which, by the way, I think is probably cruel and unusual punishment. It probably should be done away with, but that's another conversation. But why? Because even the worst, even the bad guys, it's horrific. Actually, Frontline, I know, Coles, you watched Frontline. Did you guys watch the one that was just, they just did a story. I didn't watch the whole thing. I didn't get a chance to. I have it recorded. But well, tell me about it. Did they follow one person or just talk about solitary confinement in general? It was just a couple weeks ago. Oh, maybe it wasn't new. I don't know. But yeah, there was a study just, or a documentary just done about what solitary confinement does to people. It drives them crazy. And you think, oh, you know, they're prisoners anyways, or oh, they're really antisocial anyways, or whatever we may say about them. But the reality is, we were born to interact with people. And it must be a question that people are asking a lot more, because the question underneath all of these scenarios, the question we're really asking is, what would it be like to be all alone? I mean, that's really what we're really getting you to think about, right? Well, as long as I had this or this or this, I could think about, you know, kind of distract myself. But what would it be like to be all alone? And there must be a lot of people asking the question, because when you look at the movies and television shows that are on lately, this is a scenario that's being portrayed a lot in television. It's been a while now. I think it was like maybe all the way back to 2000. But everybody remembers the Tom Hanks movie, Castaway. It was probably one of the first movies that I ever watched that really dealt with the struggle of, man, what would you do if you had nobody to talk to? And what does Tom Hanks do? He invents somebody to talk to. Like, we're so hungry for interaction that there's a volleyball. I'm going to put lipstick on it, call it a name, right? Be my friend. Of course, The Walking Dead is, you know, in all these zombie apocalypse movies, and there's some people around there, but all of those movies kind of are wrestling with this same question. What if I was all alone? As a matter of fact, has anybody watched the comedy, kind of quirky comedy on Fox called Last Man on Earth? Oh, it's so funny. It's hilarious. All right, so I want to watch this clip. Deb, go ahead and show this clip real quick. It's 3 minutes. It's kind of Castaway-ish, but I think it helps drive this point home of how badly we need each other.
Just picking up the house. Rough day. Hey, I'm whiskey. You want whiskey? Aaron? Whiskey? Sure. How about you, Jimmy?
Is it showing over on the side there, Deb?
No. Okay, well, does anyone want whiskey? Huh? Greg?
He's all by himself, so it's not that important.
No, really? Nobody? Trevor? Garrett? Trent?
Hey, maybe we'll stop at Deb's, unless we have some visual there. Is it possible? I had it already, I promise. It must have.
Marshall?
Oh, well, that's really funny. You just have to take my word for it. So what he does is, he, instead of having Wilson, he has, you know, all these little balls. I think it was in the very first episode, actually. But it's like this great illustration. Here's this guy, and he wanted to go to the bar and hang out with his buddies, you know. And he has a moment at the end where he talks about how much he missed seeing women and all that. But it's the first impulse is, man, I wish I had somebody to talk to. I wish I had somebody to hang out with. As John already mentioned this morning, we're talking about friendship. That's the word for the day. And it's under the larger category. If you remember, we have four big kind of words or phrases: family, deep, real, and part of something bigger. And friendship falls under the category of family. And John kind of alluded to it in his comments. There's a fine line between friends and family sometimes. Like John said, you don't have a choice really about what family you're born into, but your friends, you really more or less get to choose. And I started thinking about this idea and concept of friendship. And it's really kind of a fundamental pillar of our society, of any society, is how we relate to each other. And yet we really don't talk about it very much at church from a biblical or theological perspective. I venture to say we learn more about being friends at school growing up than we do at church. It may even seem kind of weird to think about friendship from a Christian perspective. But from the time that our kids are little, from the time they're in preschool, we tell them stories and talk to them about being friends. And there's so many different angles to friendship. There's the idea of being a good friend, about avoiding bad friends and bad influences, about how your friendships change and evolve. And so I asked Mary Beth if she would come up here, and she actually has, there's lots of children's stories about being a good friend. And so I would invite all of our children to come up here, and she's actually going to read to you a story this morning. Come on down, don't be afraid. Mary Beth is, or you just want to sit on the steps? Okay. Come on over here. Come on, Clark. I'm just kidding you. I have to go. Here, use that mic, please. Now, I know you all won't be able to see the pictures, but hopefully you can follow the story. This is one of the oddest but great stories that we have read to our children. I think it's odd. I don't get children's stories, so, you know. See, they think it's odd. They haven't even read it yet.
you.
I
Very good, Kellen. Thank you, guys. So while you enjoy that scenario, this is what the kids go through every week when they're stuck in here while we're having adult sermon time. Only it's just not as funny for them as it is for us. I don't know. I thought the story's odd. If you like it, more power. Randy does. Hey, Randy, that mic might have a little bit of Kellen drool on it. You know, it's just not something you think about, friendship. You think about it in children's books and children's stories, and as our children grow older, as we grow older, we talk a lot about friends and being friends and making friends. And then when you get older, you realize, this is kind of hard. And you grow up, but you don't grow up, and a lot of the issues and things that you have with children, and especially when you become teenagers, for those teenagers that are here, you start realizing that you want friends, that your parents, much to our dismay, are not enough anymore, and you need to find someone else. The Bible actually has a lot to say about friendship. There's several proverbs about friendship. Proverbs 17:17 may be one of the better known proverbs. A friend loves at all times, and a brother is born for adversity. Iron sharpens iron, and one man sharpens another. A man of too many friends comes to ruin, and there is a friend that sticks closer than a brother. I think these are just wise sayings from the Proverbs. I think that's something we can relate to, that we have friends that are probably closer to than our blood brothers and sisters. Oil and perfume make the heart gold. A man's counsel is sweet to his friend. There are several examples of friendship in the Bible. Probably the most famous in the Old Testament is David and Jonathan. Not a real well-known story, but it comes up often when we talk about friendship. It's really kind of a peculiar relationship, at least in the scope of all the other relationships that are in the Bible. If you remember, Jonathan was the son of Saul, who became kind of David's rival. Saul was the king. David was kind of anointed king because Saul had lost favor in God's eyes. And so there was this really weird kind of dynamic in the relationship where Jonathan was kind of ratting his dad out to David to kind of protect David. But listen to what 1 Samuel 18 says, describing their relationship, and see if you can relate to this when it comes to friendship. After David had finished talking with Saul, Jonathan became one in spirit with David, and he loved him as he loved himself. This is his friend he's talking about. From that day, Saul kept David with him and did not let him return home to his family. And Jonathan made a covenant with David, saying he loved him as himself. Jonathan took off his robe that he was wearing and gave it to David, along with his tunic and even his sword, his bow and his hat, or his belt. So Jonathan made a covenant with the house of David, saying, "May the Lord call David's enemies to account." And Jonathan had David reaffirm his oath out of love for him because he loved him as he loved himself. The proverb says that there is a friend who sticks closer than a brother. Now, there's a lot of things that we could say about friendship. I think one of the obvious things that comes out of David and Jonathan's friendship is that friendship is a two-way street. David was the king, and so, of course, people in power and wealth have lots of friends. You all know how that goes. But David didn't just use Nathan. I mean, certainly Nathan helped him, or Jonathan, not Nathan. Jonathan certainly was helpful in helping him overcome. But there's this interesting story in 2 Samuel 9 that we don't have time to talk about too much, but it's the story of Mephibosheth. You remember that story? Mephibosheth was Jonathan's son who was crippled. And in chapter 9, verse 1 of 2 Samuel, David said, "Is there anyone still left in the house of Saul whom I can show kindness for Jonathan's sake?" He remembered the kindness and goodness of Jonathan, and he wanted to do something for him. Because friendship is an active thing. We have to do something to be friends. Now, it's interesting because even in the Bible, Jesus himself had some friends that were closer than other friends. And I want us to think about that for a minute, because I think it kind of seeps into our churches, because the dynamics of friendship among Christians are different than other friendships. What brings us together, generally speaking, to friends outside of our faith? Well, our hobbies and interests, We were at Clark's baseball tournament yesterday. One of his dads is a big Cleveland sports fan, and I didn't know him at all. And just a couple of weeks ago, that just served as a common ground to all of a sudden strike up a small friendship, right? So often, we're drawn to people with same hobbies and interests. But friendship in our faith is different. Listen to what Jesus says in John 15. As the Father has loved me, so have I loved you. Now remain in my love. If you keep my commands, you will remain in my love, just as I have kept my Father's commands and remain in his love. I have told you this so that my joy may be in you and that your joy may be complete. My command is this: love each other as I have loved you. Greater love has no man than this, to lay down one's life for one's friends. You are my friends if you do what I command. I no longer call you servants, because a servant does not know what his master's business. Instead, I call you friends, for everything that I learned from my Father I have made known to you. You did not choose me, but I chose you and appointed you so that you might go and bear fruit, fruit that will last, and so whatever you ask in the name of the Father will be given to you. This is my covenant. Love each other. Now, what shouldn't be lost in this is Jesus isn't telling them to just go love everybody in the world. Just go be one big, you know, kumbaya party. He's specifically talking to his disciples. And he's specifically talking about the community of faith, about the people who are going to follow him. And he's telling them very specifically and very dramatically to love each other. That's what's to set us apart from everyone else. Now, within the dynamics of a church, we have our friends, and being part of a small church like ours, as you look around this morning, we're all friends, I think, at least to some degree. But when I was thinking about this, I thought about Jesus' relationship with his disciples, his apostles. And I wonder, how close were Jesus and Bartholomew? Bartholomew was an apostle, wasn't he? Chris Cole, you're Mr. List guy. He was an apostle, right? I always forget some of these guys because they're never mentioned. All right, so Bartholomew. Were him and Jesus close? Were they tight? What do you think, Chris? I mean, it never comes up, right? Like, it never comes up. Jesus chooses 12 people to be his disciple, his close confidants. And one of them, several of them, we just don't know the dynamics of that relationship. Now, three we know he was especially close to, right? Peter, James, and John. He was especially close to them. As a matter of fact, if you were to look at this, Jesus says in John 15 that those who do obey his commands are his friends. But if you were to look at the Gospels, who were Jesus' best friends? Probably Peter, James, and John. I mean, I think anybody would look at the story and say, yeah, these seem to be really good friends. The fact of the matter is we're going to be closer to some people within our circle, within our community of faith and others. But it doesn't absolve us from being friends with each other. That there's something about a friendship that keeps us whole, that keeps us pure, that keeps us going forward. Even those of us who are married, it's not like once you become married, you're like, oh, I found my best friend. I don't need friends anymore. Probably most of us that are married say, oh, I need more friends than ever before, right? There's something that a friendship provides, a companionship provides, in the relationship that Jonathan and David had, that all of us need. Now, here's the thing. We're all probably sitting there trying to think of people right now. Who are my friends? And I was thinking about it this morning as I looked out. I'm like, you know what Deb got here? Deb's upstairs. Hey, Deb. So Deb came up, and she has this huge smile on her face. Right, Deb? I don't know. She was just smiling today. I said, how was your week? She said, it was great. And I thought, man, Deb's my friend. Deb, we're friends, right? Like, and when she's happy, I'm happy. When I'm happy, Deb, are you happy? All right, that's how friendships work, right? We're in concert with each other. We look out for each other. And I bet, and we don't have time to do another sharing time because we're already late, I bet all of us can remember when a friend did something for us that was unprovoked, just out of the blue. I don't know that there's a better feeling than that, is there? You get a note in the mail. I mean, on your birthday, it's one thing. But if you just get a note on some random day, just saying, hey, I'm thinking of you. I mean, that stays with you, right? Nod. I know. Wait, show me your way. Like, you remember those things. Like, I wish we had time to just share a moment, because it stays with us sometimes for years. not just notes, those may not stay with us for years, but when somebody does something for us, a friend does something for us that's dramatic, I think it's maybe a good word or a good phrase is radical thoughtfulness. I don't know that I'm very thoughtful. My wife is probably more thoughtful than me. As Christians, we're called to be radically thoughtful. Thoughtfulness is something we teach our children when they're young, and it's kind of a society-wide accepted thing. Oh, being thoughtful is nice. Christ compels us to be radically thoughtful. I have a Superman trash can that sits on my desk. It has for years and years and years. And anytime I get a note from somebody, if you've ever written me a note, it's probably in that trash can. Because there are some times that I just pick them out, and I'm having a crappy day or something, and I'll just read them and just be encouraged again. Because they have staying power. It's like a magic trash can. It really is. And sometimes I'll just get out several of them, and I'll read them and go, oh, life is okay. Deb is still happy. I'm happy, right? I still got this message from somebody. That's an encouragement. Here's the thing. It means so much to us to receive those kinds of things. But we often forget that all of us have within our ability and power to be that person for someone else. I mean, we sit around all the time, and I hear it all the time. I wish I had someone I was closer to. I wish I was a better friend to somebody. I wish I had the same commonalities or the same hobbies with somebody. But the thing is, Christ says, you already have the most important thing in common with each other. And so friendship within the community of faith is different and more compelling and more radical than it is outside of the community. But it's incumbent upon all of us to not sit there and go, what can I do to receive more friendship, to get the accolades of more friendship? Instead, asking ourselves, man, I wonder how I can give and be the giver in a friendship. If you really want the church to change, if you really want your relationships to change, I think it starts there. I think it starts by becoming radically thoughtful. There are some radically thoughtful people among us this morning. Most of us probably know who they are because they've been radically thoughtful to us. I think that the challenge for us as we leave today is how can we go about our week being radically thoughtful and being good friends to those around us? Like, Facebook has kind of redefined friends. I don't know, I've got like 1,000 friends on Facebook. Are those my friends? Right? No, that's a different kind of friendship. The friendship that we're talking about this morning is more radical. And as Christ beckons us in our faith, let us go and be friends to people. One of the reasons we're talking about friendship is because we marked as one of our core tenets of our church, we're family. And as I said at the beginning, there's a fine line between friends and family, and they kind of come together in the fellowship of faith, where all of a sudden, we're here for each other. And it's okay for you to find somebody and say, I don't feel like I have my friends, I don't have the companions I need. We need to be that for each other. We need to be that for each other. But just as equally feeling that way, there are other people here who feel that way. And so if we could bring it upon ourselves to be radically thoughtful to them, there's a lot of people gone this morning. Maybe it'll be a great opportunity for all of us to be radically thoughtful and say, hey, when I'm gone for a Sunday from Allen Creek, what would I like in the subsequent week? Maybe a note, maybe a text, maybe a card, maybe a call, maybe something. Because that's what friends do. We've all probably had friends who we always seem to be the one to call. We always seem to be the one to reach out. Christ beckons us to, no, you be that person. You be that person. Thank you for reading the story, Mary Beth, this morning, and for trying to think a little bit about how friendship from a social standpoint connects to a biblical standpoint. There are several other passages we don't have time to get into this morning, but as we close, we're going to sing this song on the way out, and hopefully it's a word of encouragement to remind us that as much as we like to receive those words of encouragement, we can be friends to other people. So let's stand and we'll